New South Wales and Victoria are preparing to reintegrate 8 Australian children who were rescued from a Syrian refugee camp in a secret Australian government operation in the last 48 hours. The children, aged between 8 and 18, spent years living under ISIS rule after their parents left Australia for Syria and Iraq. They include the children of Islamic State jihadist Khalid Sharouf and another foreign fighter. But the repatriation process won't be easy, and Australia will be looking to other countries where radicalised children have already been successfully rehabilitated. Gina Vale is a research fellow at London's King's College International Centre for the Study of Radicalisation. She specialises in minors affiliated with Islamic State. Gina Vale, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Hi, good morning or good evening from me.
Gina, with the news that 8 children who have been rescued from their Syrian camps, who have been the children of ISIS fighters, are coming here to Australia. People are wondering, how do you manage them? These children must have been exposed to a tremendous amount of trauma. From the experience there in the UK, are they capable of recovery?
Yes, certainly. We have to understand, first of all, that not all children have had the same experiences under Islamic State. As you said, some have enrolled within IS's indoctrination and military training will have at least witnessed, if not themselves carried out, acts of violence. And you will have seen one of Khalid Sharouf's sons holding up a severed head, which obviously made international headlines back in 2014. But yes, it certainly is possible to rehabilitate children. But it's important that, and this is something that obviously Australia has taken seriously with their act to repatriate children, it's important that you put the developmental needs first for children and not to overly securitize them.
So when you mean that, you say let's get their education right, let's get their perhaps psychological support right, let's not lock them up, is that what you're saying?
Yes, we need to understand that in order for children to have a chance at reintegrating back into society and therefore to have more of a long-term, sustainable prospect of full reintegration and rehabilitation, it's important that these children have access to basic needs such as healthcare in the first instance, which of course they have limited access to in detention and internment camps in Iraq and Syria, but also education and the chances for example, a permanent address, the likelihood of marriage, employment, all other things that come from a stable identity and civil rights within their country of origin.
But how big a step is it for a child? You mentioned the child there, the son of Khalid Sharouf, who made those headlines with that photograph of him, the young boy holding the severed head. Now, that boy is dead. He died in the conflict. But his brothers and sisters live on, and they would have seen those photos and presumably witnessed horrendous things around them and at home. I mean, how do you begin to bring a child home and start putting them in lessons again, because many of them wouldn't have been to school at least for some time, you know, when they have suffered such trauma and such a brutalizing culture, which I imagine, I can only imagine it must have been, what state are they in to be able to sit still and learn maths and English?
Well, actually, for particularly boys who were enrolled in military training in many cases, and Khalid Sharouf and Tara Nettleton's children were some of these enrolled in Islamic State's CUBS program, they would have been ingrained with sentiments of discipline, hard work, diligence in order to take in a lot of the information that was force-fed to them. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they would be amenable to some of the ideas of Western or democratic ideas through education upon immediate return. But it's important to try and use some of the tools in which Daesh is already ingrained in them to try and then bring out some of the more positive aspects of their rehabilitation through education.
So we know that state authorities here, from education, from health, from community services and the police, have been working on a management plan. But we also know that people are saying, well, I don't know that I want those kids sitting next to my kid in school. And there's been question marks about whether these kids should be homeschooled, at least in the short term, whether they should be given new identities. Have you had experience in Britain with what the so-called Cubs of the Caliphate so far, and how have you, you know, have any of them been given new identities?
Well, the UK, as you may have known, has been a little bit more silent on the matter of whether children and adults will be repatriated from Iraq and Syria. There have been cases where children have returned, but their identities have been kept strictly private. And this is for their own safety, as well as, of course, not fear-mongering. It's important to know that despite Islamic State training or indoctrinating children on a mass scale, we need to look at potential security threats that these children may pose upon return on an individual case-by-case basis. It cannot be generalized. And therefore, these children do have a right to privacy. In most cases, their being within Islamic State territory was not of their own volition, but this was, as some headlines have put it, paying for the crimes of their parents.
Of course. So, I noticed a report from your college suggests that foreign minors, quote, possess the ideological commitment and practical skills to pose a potential threat upon return to their home countries. Is that necessarily the case, though? As you say, these children have been taken, or some of them born into this situation, against their will. Is the evidence suggest that they do pose an ideological threat to society, or could they in fact swing the other way and be so happy to be taken out of that pretty brutal surrounding?
So there are two elements in there. One is to theoretically hold on to the ideology of Islamic State, which certainly won't be eroded away quickly. With, again, reintegration, rehabilitation and re-education of these children, that is something that can happen. But the threat side is taking that ideology through to mobilization in order for these children to be able to conduct acts of violence. And so far, there have been cases of children who have supported Islamic State's ideology that have carried out attacks in Western states. However, none of these so far have been children that have returned from Iraq and Syria.
So, Gina Vale, just finally, the human rights chief of the UN, Michelle Bachelet, overnight has called on countries to take responsibility for their citizens, to take them back if not charged. Mm-hmm. She spoke particularly about children, and she said states should provide the same access to nationality for children born to their nationals in conflict zones as is otherwise applicable. Otherwise, to inflict statelessness on children who've suffered so much is an irresponsible cruelty. Now, with the Sharif children, that situation has arisen. I think they are probably in the process, I understand, of getting some kind of paperwork and citizenship. But how much of an issue is this?
This is critical. If children don't have the right to identification papers from their country of origin, then they would be rendered legally stateless. Within that situation, they would be put into a case of limbo where they are not able to access healthcare, a permanent address, education, employment, the right for marriage, etc. All of these civil rights that we take for granted, but these would be closed off to these children. If you close those avenues off, what you risk is then pushing some individuals further towards the fringes of society, which then may build again the same grievances that caused some adults and older teenagers to join IS and believe in their cause. So we need to look into the long term of the consequences of our actions. If we take a stance that is purely fueled by vengeance, this only then breeds longer term disenfranchisement and potentially radicalization in the future.
And so what's the evidence, I suppose? I mean, what you're saying is if we don't manage this right now, we can, in fact, lock in the problem for later time. If we have stateless children, that's going to build not just resentment, but also they will be ripe for the picking.
Correct. And we're, of course, talking about a region that is already unstable, in many cases insecure, particularly in Kurdish-controlled areas of Syria. What may happen is if states continue to adopt on a larger scale policies of omission, then what might happen is eventually the banks of the river will burst and we will get to a stage where potentially detainees will no longer be in a position to be held by Kurdish or other authorities. There have been recent reports where Germany has lost track of up to 150 of its nationals. This is only going to breed further instability in the future. And if we don't act now and take decisive action, like Australia has done in order to repatriate children, though it needs to be done on a mass scale, We then may be in a position of greater instability in the future.
So just finally then, talking about it being done on a mass scale, the UN says there's 29,000 children of ISIS fighters there in these camps, most of them in these camps, not all of them. I mean, a lot of Australia's taking 8 back. I don't know how Britain is. Some countries are refusing to take them back. So what will happen to these children?
As I said, it may be a case of legal statelessness or limbo for these children, particularly for infants that were born inside Islamic State territory. For example, if they were born to dual national parents, i.e. a parent from each country, then in many cases, states may argue the toss on who would take primary responsibility and care for that child. That child is not in a position to argue for its own rights in that case. So who is going to take responsibility? And unfortunately, this is only a matter of time before we look now into the longer term consequences of inaction.
Gina Vale, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Gina Vale is a research fellow at London's King's College International Centre for the Study of Radicalisation.